Chapter 11, Code Crackers.
"We ought to go to the police now," Fergal said. "They'll never believe us," Charlotte told him. "They'll say we wrote it ourselves. They'll never believe we found it in a tin. They will when they see we've got an ear and a finger to go with it." "Oh, maybe," Charlotte reluctantly agreed. She could see that perhaps Fergal was right. They should go to the police and hand everything over to them. The finger, the ear, the ring, the stud, and now the note with the word "help" written on it. And leave the rest to them. But in all honesty, she didn't want to. And neither did Fergal if he was equally truthful. It was something you wanted to work out alone and then go to the police afterwards, when you had all the evidence and all the answers to give them, and all they had to do was to go and make arrests. You didn't want them to solve the mystery, you wanted to solve it for yourself. Who did the tins belong to, anyone? Who were the ones who had taken up the hobby in the first place? When nobody else was interested. When everyone thought it was a pretty stupid pastime, in fact. That's right, Fergal for one, Charlotte for another. And you didn't discover the most interesting, fascinating tins in the world just to hand your secrets over to somebody else to fathom. It was for them to get to the bottom of the tins. It was their duty, their responsibility. Fergal and Charlotte eyed each other with a mutual silent understanding, conspiracy implicit in their glances. Charlotte picked up the piece of paper and looked at it through her spectacles. It was ragged and torn along one edge, and triangular in shape. "Looks like somebody ripped off something. A paper bag, maybe. Or the corner of an envelope." "So what can we tell from that, then?" Fergal said. Charlotte thought a while. "I don't know. Have you got any suggestions?" "No," Fergal said. "Okay, let's think about it logically for 5 minutes. You come up with an explanation, and I'll come up with an explanation. Then we'll go on from there." They sat in silence. Charlotte's clock ticked the seconds away. The seconds turned to minutes, and soon the time was up. "Well," she said. Fergal had been staring out of the window. He turned and faced her. "Okay, how's this? Someone, let's say it's a he, is being held prisoner in some kind of factory where they put things in tins. He knew he was going to be murdered and he had no way of getting help. The only way he could think of was to get a message into a tin somehow. So he managed to do that. He knew his hope of this message being found by somebody eventually was quite good, because all tins must get open in the end. But he also knew that his chances of being saved were still very slim, because you don't know when someone will open a tin. It might sit in the pantry for years. And also, it's one thing to find a tin, it's another to discover where it came from. In a way, it's like someone on a desert island putting a message into a bottle." "A message in a tin, in fact," Charlotte interjected. "Precisely. You put a message into a bottle, you throw it into the ocean, and you let the tide and the currents take it. It might travel for years and never be found. It might travel thousands of miles. It might only travel 2 or 3. But it might save your life in the end." "But why wouldn't you say in the note where you were, so that people could find you?" "Because," Fergal said, "you wouldn't necessarily know where you were. This man in the factory, it was like he'd been shipwrecked. Sure, you know you're on an island. But what island?" "Same for him. He knew he was in a factory. But what factory? Where?" "Maybe that part he didn't know. Or maybe he didn't have time to write it down. Or maybe he only had this little bit of paper. Or maybe..." "All right," Charlotte said, fearing he would never stop. "No need to go on forever. I take your point. And so..." "Well, that's it," Fergal said. "That's my explanation. So what about the finger and the ear and the ring and the stud?" "Oh yes, that bit. Well, he was too late." "How do you mean?" "With the note, they chopped him up and put him in tins. And by the time the note was discovered, it was all too late and he couldn't be rescued." "But why would they put him in tins?" Charlotte said. "Like you say, all tins get opened eventually. If you're going to murder somebody, you don't want people finding the evidence. So why put the person in tins?" "Will people find bits of bodies in tins?" "Well, they're bound to go to the police." Fergal gave her a long, cool look. "We haven't," he reminded her. "True," Charlotte had to admit. "But all the same, if I was a murderer and I had a body to get rid of, I'd go and bury it somewhere, or throw it into the sea with a paving slab tied to its leg so it could never, ever be found. I wouldn't stick it in a tin and send it off to the supermarket. No way." Fergal sighed. He didn't say so, but he had to agree with her. His explanation was all right as far as it went. It just didn't actually go very far. "Go on then," he said. "So what's your theory?" Charlotte sat down in her bed and hugged her knees with her arms. Well, it isn't a theory exactly, she said. It's more a series of points. Go on. Well, first of all, how did these tins ever get out of the factory? On a lorry, probably. No, I don't mean that. I mean, how did they ever get past all the checks and the controls that there must be? Surely when you're running a factory, you have quality control and supervisors and people making sure that nothing substandard gets out. I see what you mean, Fergal conceded. You mean all the tins are probably automatically weighed and things like that? Yes. So how did they get past all the checks then? He said. Charlotte took a moment to answer. They don't have any checks, she said. But why wouldn't they? Because it's a rotten factory. It's old-fashioned, it's substandard, and it's second-rate, and they don't care what goes out as long as they make money. How do you work that out? Well, think about it. For a start, the labels keep coming off. I mean, okay, labels get torn off tins all the time. Maybe when they're unpacked in the warehouse, they get a bit of rough handling. Or maybe somebody drops a pallet of tins from the forklift truck as they're unloading the lorry. And you end up with a few dozen dented ones and ones with no labels. But the labels are coming off these tins all the time. And why is that? Well, because they're not being put on properly in the first place. Because it's a cheap, nasty factory, they use cheap, nasty glue, which doesn't stick very well. And they don't have any quality control to ensure that substandard and underweight tins don't make it off the conveyor belt. Fergal nodded. He had to agree that it made a certain amount of sense. And I'll tell you something else Charlotte ploughed on, which makes me think it's an old-fashioned and substandard factory. The tins themselves. What about them? Fergal said. She gave him a look of reproach. What kind of a tin collector was he to ask a question like that? Look at this one, she said. Charlotte took the now empty tin and placed it on the bed. Then she took an unopened tin without a label from her collection and placed that beside the first one. See? See what? She shot him another withering glance. Look at the metal. It just looks cheap. And this tin has to be opened with a tin opener. Most of the popular and well-known brands have gone over to ring pull tins. You don't need an opener for them. You just grab the ring and yank the top off and there you are. So my theory is that whatever they make in this factory, it's some kind of economy brand, something cheap, something they're none too fussy about. Something like what? I don't know, Charlotte had to admit. Fergal looked despondent. He had thought that she was going to come up with the answer right there and then. Me neither, he said. Charlotte brightened up. But maybe there's a way to find out. How? We keep searching the supermarkets. For what? For tins like this one. Cheap-looking tins. Tins whose labels aren't stuck on very well and appealing away. But that wouldn't prove anything. There might be loads of cheap and nasty factories making cheap and nasty tinned goods with the labels peeling away. But if we find the right tins, the same as this, only with the label still on, then we'll have the brand name, won't we? And most labels, as well as the manufacturer's name, usually have an address too. Then we'll know where the help note came from, where it was put into this tin. Charlotte's voice dropped to a half whisper, and we'll know where the chopped off finger came from. And the severed ear. And even if it's too late for the person who wrote the note, there might still be others in the same predicament. Yes, but how can we know, even if we do find the right brand, that it is the right brand? From these, Charlotte said. She upturned the tin which had contained the note and pointed to the series of numbers and letters printed on the bottom. See? The serial number. I reckon that if we can find tins on the supermarket shelves with the same, or at least very similar numbers to these, we'll have found the right brand and the right factory. Wait, Fergal said. If what you're saying is true then, have you still got the tin the ear came in? Yes, of course. And the one with the ring? Yes. Let's see them. Charlotte went to the wardrobe, opened a drawer, rummaged about in it, and produced the two tins. She brought them over to the bed and put them next to the tin which had contained the help note. Okay, turn them over. Charlotte did so. There, on the bottom of the tins, were the serial numbers and codes. Give me a pencil. Fergal passed her a pencil and a piece of paper from her desk. Right, read it out. Okay, Fergal picked up the tin which had contained the note. There was a 17-character code on the base of the tin. He read it out and Charlotte wrote each digit down. DFBN161, got that, 4590, 4590, 23, 3-5. Got that? Ayo. Right. Okay, I'll read the code out from one of the other tins now. Was this the one that had the E in it? Yes, I marked it with a magic marker. It's got an E written there, see? Okay, here's the code. Ready? It's DFBN14811904017AO. Okay? And the tin that had the ring in it? DFBN12012128085AO. Right, let's see. Charlotte placed the paper down upon the duvet so they could both see the three codes, written one under the other. One of the codes is longer than the others, Fergal pointed out. Why's that? Well, we'll have to work it out. Start at the beginning. The first four letters are always the same. They must identify something then. Like what's in the tin? Yes, the product or where it was made. What factory it was made in. Manufacturer's name, perhaps. Something like that. Then there's three numbers. Maybe they're batch numbers. Maybe that's what the BN means. Batch number. Followed by the number. So DF means what? Stands for what's in the tin? Maybe. What's next? 4590, 1190 and 121280. Got to stand for something. Maybe they're dates, Fergal suggested. Dates? What kind of dates? Sell-by dates. Use-by dates. They'd print them on the labels for the customers, only here in the manufacturing serial number, they've coded them a little. How? Turn them round. Look, say 90 stands for 2009 and 80 for 2008. Well, that would make sense because the one with 80 on it also has an earlier batch number. So 4590 would mean the fourth day of the fifth month of 2009, the 4th of May. And 1190 would mean the 1st of January. And 121280 would mean the 12th of December 2008. What's after that? 2335, 1417 and 1805. I know, it must be the time of day. Yes, on the 24-hour clock to tell you what the tin was sealed or something like that. What about AO? Fergal said. That last bit must be another identifier of some kind. It's the same on all three tins, so it must have something to do with the contents of the tin or in the place they were made. So that's what we have to look for. DFBN, followed by a batch number, followed by a date, followed by a time, followed by AO. Fergal squinted at Charlotte. When you say, that's what we have to look for, what do you mean exactly? I mean, we have to go through all the tins in the supermarkets we bought these from, looking for a similar code. Once we find it, we're on our way to knowing where the note came from, and the ring, and the finger. Yes, but all the tins, Fergal said. All the tins, Charlotte. In how many supermarkets? Have you any idea how many tins that is? Talk about needles in haystacks. To look at the bottom of every single tin in a supermarket, that would take forever. How are we going to do it? We'll get thrown out. We can't go around looking at every single tin. They'll think we're loonies. Well, to start with, we don't actually have to look at the bottom of every tin. Just at one of every type of tin. You don't have to look at every tin of Camberwell's tomato soup, for instance. Just one to see what the code looks like. If it's not the code we're after, then forget about it and on to the next. You don't have to look at every single tin of a particular brand, do you? That would be pointless. Just looking at one will be enough. Fergal could see the sense in it. He nodded and said, yes, okay. But even so, it's still going to take a long time. And how are we going to do it? The only way we can, Charlotte said. One shelf at a time. How often do you go shopping at the supermarket we met in? Once a week with my mum. Me too. Okay, so we'll start there. We'll divide that supermarket in half. You do one lot of shelves, I'll do the other. Then we'll visit all the other supermarkets we've got dodgy tins from. It doesn't matter how long it takes, we just keep going until we find the tins with the right code. And if we do, not if, Fergal, when. Okay, and when we do then we have to investigate, don't we? We have, like they say on crime scene, to make our inquiries and to pursue our investigations. Well, that, Fergal pointed out, might be dangerous. We're not dealing with a bunch of stamp collectors here, you know. We're dealing with a cut-off finger and a severed ear and a note that says help. Finding where these tins have come from could actually be highly dangerous indeed. Yes, Charlotte nodded, it could well be dangerous. Interesting though, isn't it? Or would you rather go to the police after all and let them have all the fun? But that question required no answer. She knew it and so did Fergal. The two of them sat a while, contemplating the tins and the ragged note reading help. Fergal tried to calculate how long it would take them to check each type of tin in a supermarket. Quite a while, he reckoned. You'd really need somebody like Hercules for a task like that. It's a big job, isn't it? Charlotte said, seeming to echo his thoughts. Yes, he nodded, it is. But we can do it, can't we, Ferg? We can do it together, the two of us. She'd called him Ferg. No one had ever called him Ferg before. It made him feel all warm inside. So that's the end of chapter 11. The next one is chapter 12, and the title is Beans, Beans, Beans. So have a think, make a prediction on what you think is going to happen in chapter 12, and I'll read this and put it on the website for next Monday. Okay? Have an amazing week, year four.